morning. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. We're going to be talking to the wonderful women, a whole bunch of authors from the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival in just a few minutes. But right now, I would like to remind you that today is yet another day in the KSFR Fun Drive, which will be over as soon as you donate, ladies and gentlemen. It's the time when we ask everybody, nay, request strongly that everybody pick up their telephone and make a call to 505-428-1393. We do this because we need to stay on the air. We do this because we know you love the station. We know that many of you love the Radio Cafe. I've gotten many, many people say to me, Mary Charlotte, I love your show. I listen every day. Some of those people have not yet called to make a pledge to the radio station. And if you say that and you don't donate, it's hard to imagine what you're thinking. This is a station that actually only survives because of listener support. When listeners call and make a pledge, we're saying, yeah, I like the cafe, and I'd like to support it. Let's say that you decide you want to spend 10 cents or 25 cents a day to support the Radio Cafe. Let's say you listen four times a week, and you want to spend a quarter for each time you listen. Is that worth it to you? Would it be worth it to you to have the Radio Cafe on for the price of one quarter to you? So that would be a dollar a week. Do the math on that. You know, Ron Bloomberg has been here, and I think he's still here, and I'm hoping that he joins us. In any case, we're going to talk to these folks from the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival in just a moment. But please pick up your telephone now and call 428-1393. Okay, I'm getting a lot of noise and interference. Let's go on. I'm delighted to welcome now Carmela Padilla. She is with the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival, which is happening this weekend. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte, for having me.
So is this, what, the second or third year of this?
This is the second year of the Book Festival, and we had a successful year last year, and a lot of women were really encouraged and excited about being highlighted together in terms of the women's talent in this state. And so we decided to do it again.
So it's happening at Museum Hill.
On Museum Hill, on Milner Plaza, which is the plaza in between the Museum of International Folk Art and the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, from 11 to 5 p.m. On Saturday, September 26th.
So it's Saturday, and there are all sorts of, basically it's divided up into categories, into types of books. So there's fiction and poetry and creative arts and history and biography and children and all sorts of things. And people can just mill around and meet gazillions of women authors.
Yeah, it's modeled after the National Library of Congress's National Book Festival, which is held each year in Washington. And basically, it's formatted as a series of open-air pavilions, so most of it is outdoors.
And we hope the weather's nice.
Exactly. Knock on wood that it will be nice. And so there will be many things going on simultaneously. There's a full schedule of events from 11 to the close at 4 o'clock. And at every half-hour interval, you will have a new author in a different pavilion. So you will have many authors going, giving short presentations simultaneously and doing book signings. Some authors, I'm not sure who they are yet, will be actually meeting with some local book groups who have expressed an interest in their newest book in particular, and so they'll be working with a book group. A couple authors will be actually in either the MIME Auditorium and I believe perhaps the Museum of International Folk Art Auditorium to give some presentations that require a PowerPoint or a slideshow. But for the most part, it's a really informal, casual, interactive setting where it's, you know, you just come and sit down, and you can wander among pavilions and just, you know, talk to whoever you'd like to talk to and listen to whoever you'd like to talk to.
And these are all people with fairly newly published books.
Well, it's a mix of emerging authors and very well-established authors. So that's what's really wonderful about it. It's this whole breadth of talent from across New Mexico, not only Santa Fe. We have authors from outside of the city as well. And some people are just getting started, and then you have people like Deborah Madison, who's an established cookbook author.
Who we're going to talk to in a couple of minutes.
Yes, and very well known. You have people like Alisa Valdez Rodriguez, who's kind of known as what they call a chick lit author. But
chick lit?
Yeah. She had a big, big blockbuster hit a few years ago. And basically, when you go to the book festival, you will be given, it's a free admission, so you get into the festival free. You'll be given a schedule of events that will talk about, that will show who's talking, what time, what their books are, and also you'll be given a free book bag.
Nice. So you are not only one of the organizers of this wonderful event, and once again, we are giving away one book from each author, so get to your phones quickly and dial 428-1393, and you can get a copy of one of these books by each author. Your book is called El Rancho de las Golondrinas. You are an author, you are a journalist, and you've written several books of history regional from this area. And this is really a history of the La Cienega Valley told through the story of El Rancho de las Golondrinas.
Yes, that's correct. And this book was released by the Museum of New Mexico Press in June. It was a project that I've worked on the last 3 years. I worked as the writer. Jack Parsons, who's an incredible photographer, did photography. And Mark Simmons wrote a foreword. And the book is looking at the entire La Cienega Valley as a really important area in New Mexico history that sometimes gets overlooked because it's, you know, everybody's always thinking about getting over La Bajada and getting to Santa Fe. And La Cienega's in between the two, but La Cienega itself has this really rich history that spans, you know, many centuries and many different periods of government, you know, from early Spanish government to the Mexican government to, of course, U.S. government. And through it all, El Rancho de las Golondrinas, which is a living history museum that many people love to go to in the summertime, has played a pivotal role in one way or another and has been a home to a host of really interesting characters in Santa Fe and La Cienega, New Mexico history.
So it's a living history museum now. What was it before that?
Well, it was a big hacienda compound, if you will. You know, it started out as a smaller ranch in a newer settlement in the early 18th century. It was the first homes out there were built probably around 1710, and that it expanded as children in the family. It was a Vega y Coca family that originally purchased that property, as the family expanded and children were married, other children settled there until eventually you had a large spread that became very noted in terms of its as a sheep ranch, as a possibly a textile weaving center or production center, and a place on the Camino Real, because it was so close to the Camino Real, it was a very common stop for people coming either north into Santa Fe or south down into Mexico. The book, however, looks pre-Spanish occupation into the whole history of that area during the Native period, which, of course, if you don't really look at that as the foundation for the Spanish, Mexican, and U.S. history, you don't have anything. So it really goes back in time about 7 centuries overall.
How did you do your research for that?
Well, I did a lot of reading. I did worked with a lot of researchers who have done some work in the area already. It's a little researched area in the sense that there's a lot of archaeological wealth out there, but
digs still to be done.
And you know, unfortunately, there's been so much development in recent years that it's getting harder and harder to really find out what was truly out there.
Yeah, people don't want their yards or their basements dug up.
Yes, yeah. And I also went in depth into the story of the family that actually turned that site eventually in the 20th century into a living history museum, and that's that family has an incredible story in itself. So I used a lot of primary material from the family, from the family archive, looked at diaries, looked at letters, looked at other little notes and things. And the amazing thing about all of it is, everything is intertwined. There's so much that I would see in those diaries that had something to do with maybe another area of Santa Fe history or New Mexico history that I had looked at before in another project. And it's amazing. We really are still such a small world. And particularly in those days, everybody's had some kind of relationship that was significant. So even if you were living in La Cienega, it was very likely that you had some kind of major activity going on in Santa Fe.
We're talking to Carmela Padilla. Her book is called El Rancho de las Golondrinas. It can be yours if you call right now, 505-428-1393. And this is a book which also, the word coffee table book is disparaging and you don't want to think of it that way, but the photographs are absolutely beautiful and they give you such a textural, and you can almost see the feet, you can almost smell the places that these photographs are depicting.
Well, Jack Parsons is an extraordinary photographer, a dear friend of mine who I've worked with on various projects, and he actually has an association with Las Golondrinas that goes back to its founding in 1970, and so he's been taking photographs out there over time for the last since then, so he had this whole wealth of photography already in his stock, and then he went out and took more in terms of what the place looks like today, and it just really represents this beautiful continuum of time.
Carmela Padilla, we will see you at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival. What time are you going to be reading on Saturday?
I will be there at noon on Saturday in the History and Biography Pavilion. And I did want to mention one thing is that the festival is sponsored by the Museum of New Mexico Foundation Shops. And so this is not only a benefit for New Mexico women authors in terms of exposure and getting people to buy their books, but it's support for the Museum of New Mexico.
Now, give us one good reason why people should call right now, besides the fact that they can get your marvelous book, but why should people be supporting KSFR and public radio?
Well, because in my personal and professional experience, KSFR has really taken the time and the effort to get involved in this community in terms of the arts, and particularly in terms of literary arts. And I think that your role in promoting authors from Santa Fe and beyond, and promoting books and projects like this, is so important, and it's really needed in a community that depends a lot on literary arts as part of its cachet. And as
Carmela, thank you so much. You're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and call right now, 428-1393. You can get a copy of this wonderful book, El Rancho de las Golondrinas, by Carmela Padilla, and photographs by Jack Parsons. 428-1393. If you like this station, if you support public radio, we are here for you. Please be there for us. And let's go on.
Hey, Ron.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mary Charlotte.
Let us know.
We have some thank yous.
Yes,
yeah, okay. Hi, Mary Charlotte. Hi. Remember me?
Ron yeah. Bloomberg is here with us. We are on a very tight schedule today. Let's thank the people who called and made a pledge.
Well, Jonathan Sandemel called. He repaired your computer.
Yes, Dotfoil Computer Services. They are the gods of computers.
And Sloan Cunningham called, and
thank
we want to thank her.
What a great name.
A great animal
Isn't
lover.
It a great name?
Yeah,
is that
really
a man
is.
Or a woman? I don't know. Sloan.
I think
what is
it could be either one.
Either one, okay.
Mary Charlotte, hi. This is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl. And let's go on. I'm delighted now to welcome Deborah Madison. She is a renowned chef and the author of many cookbooks and countless articles on food. And her latest book with her husband, Patrick McFarlane, is called What We Eat When We Eat Alone. Welcome.
Thank you.
And now, we've talked about this before on the radio, but I just could not resist talking about it again because you are going to be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival, and you will be giving a presentation at 3 in the afternoon this coming Saturday. This book is, I really think, one of the funniest books I've seen in a long time.
Well, good.
It's this whole question of what we eat when we eat alone. It brings out, it's almost like people coming out of the closet.
Well, we noticed that when we interviewed people, they couldn't wait to tell us what they eat when they eat alone. I mean, we didn't even ask the question. We just said we were working on this project. Well, let me tell you what I do. People are very eager to talk about that for some reason, regardless of what they answer.
Your husband Patrick's drawings and illustrations are so funny, but what's even funnier is that they're pretty much all from reality.
Well, yeah, they and the recipes both are very much driven by the people we talked to. We didn't just sit down and kind of think things up and then get it to fit. But one person said, for example, well, I always start with the oldest vegetables first. And Patrick had this image of old vegetables on walkers and in stretchers and, you know, wrinkled carrots and, you know, feeble asparagus. And I don't think that would have come to him if somebody hadn't said that and he just hadn't heard, oh, old vegetables, and image really came.
Well, I can understand that because, of course, I have sometimes buy fruits and then they sit there for a while and they start to look a little bit unhappy. So I just put them all in the blender and make a nice fruit juice and they're fine.
There you go. There's a solution.
But there's one which shows a young man launching a bag of frozen peas through the air into a boiling pot on the stove.
Right. He was very big on frozen vegetables, and it was curious because he was one of the few people, and for a young man, you might think this is unusual, who made his own salad dressing. You know, that was very important to him, to make his own vinaigrette. But when it came to a fresh versus a frozen vegetable, frozen. They're convenient. You can just eat as much as you want. They don't go bad on you. They don't get old, you know. So he was very insistent about that.
Now, what we eat and when we eat alone seems to be really antithetical to the principles of the slow food movement, where we eat farmers market food and we prepare it over, you know, the time that it takes to actually prepare it and then eat it slowly with our beloved friends and family. This is more like taking something out of the freezer at 10 o'clock. And
not necessarily, actually. There is a lot of that, and there are a lot of really creepy things, you know, that people do that you know, you would never share with your friends, you'd never serve to anybody else, that really are quite disgusting, really. They show an incredible lack of self-respect to even consider eating such things. But that wasn't the whole portrait. There are many people who kind of value their own company enough to bother to cook something, including a farmer's market salad, which was one of our interviewees just thought nothing of it. She says, well, of course I do that. And there was all the food on her counter as she spoke. So it goes both ways. And I think that the idea of slow food might not be so much eating slowly or cooking slowly or spending a lot of time, but connecting the process of feeding oneself with a sense of pleasure and a sense of self-respect, that you can sit down at the table and enjoy a meal and a glass of wine as opposed to wolfing something down over the sink, you know.
What do you think is the grossest recipe or confession, whatever you want to call it?
Oh, I have it. Yeah, it's easy. It's margarita mix over bread.
Ladies and gentlemen, this book can be yours if you call right now, 428-1393. It's called What We Eat When We Eat Alone, Deborah Madison, and wonderful drawings and illustrations by Patrick McFarlane. When you were last here and we talked about this book, I confessed that mine was fried bananas over rice, but I realized that usually when I make that, I do share it with somebody. And so I wasn't really quite honest. And I think the honest one is popcorn with butter and Parmesan cheese.
That sounds good.
It is good.
Yeah, there you can do wonderful things with popcorn. You know, you could do it with smoked sea salt or with smoked paprika or, you know, Indian spices. A good old butter and salt's pretty nice too.
And if it's organic popcorn, you think that maybe you're not doing something that's all that unhealthy compared to, say, a bag of Bugles or Fritos.
Well, yeah, or a can of Hormel chili over nacho, over Fritos, and put in the toaster oven with a bunch of cheese on it. You know, there's some things like that. That was a woman's idea, by the way. Not a man, even though it sounds sort of like greasy men's food.
Did you find that there was a gender breakdown between the kinds of things that men and women did, or not so much?
There was and there wasn't. I mean, there's certain things. Men tend to repeat things more often. A man might seriously cook, like a flank steak that's stuffed with bacon and cheese and mushrooms. This is actually a recipe in the book from a bartender in town, rolled it up and grilled it. And we made that. It served six of us at dinner. So obviously he is probably eating on it for, I don't know, two or three nights anyway. We'll give him that. Or a leg of lamb is not going to be eaten in a very short amount of time. But actually, often men were the more sensitive and serious cooks, whereas women, who often have to cook all the time for families, you know, when they were finally alone, oh boy, carbs and salt. You know, it could be potatoes with caramelized onions and sour cream, or fried potatoes and olive oil with a yogurt feta sauce from a Greek friend of ours, or simply oatmeal with, you know, Maldon sea salt on top.
Well, breakfast for dinner, I think, is always fabulous.
I do, too.
Do you really?
Oh, absolutely. I just recently read an article in some magazine about breakfast for dinner, and it's such a comfortable fallback kind of position, because breakfast is a comfort. Even though we're starting the day, there's some breakfasts that are comforting in their familiarity. We know what pancakes are like, or French toast. There's not big surprises there. And if they are, they're usually delicious surprises. So there's something very nice about, hey, let's just have a fried egg on toast for breakfast, or a fried egg sandwich, or I'll make some waffles and cut up some fruit, you know.
For
breakfast or dinner, yeah. And when you do it for dinner, it's kind of this revelation, like, oh, we can really enjoy this for dinner. We don't have to run off to something. You know, it's nice. I think a lot of people actually do that, and they could do it more, especially if they turn to eggs, because there's nothing faster than a scrambled egg. You know.
We're talking to Deborah Madison. Once again, the number is 428-1393. What We Eat When We Eat Alone is the name of the book. Since we last talked to you, it's been some months, and I'm wondering how the book is doing. I would think it would be a runaway bestseller.
I don't think it's quite that, but we're happy to say that it's gone back for a second printing, and it was a generous first one, so something's happening with it, and it got picked up by the London Guardian, and that sort of spurred a number of interviews in other countries, Brazil and Spain. Germany is interested in doing a German version of it. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's sort of getting legs of its own.
It would be interesting to see what happened if each country did a What We Eat When We Eat Alone. In other words, what did the Hungarians eat when they eat alone, or the Balinese or whatever?
Sure.
Well, the Balinese never eat alone, but
there probably are countries where people seldom eat alone.
Yeah. Interesting. Deborah Madison, why should people call right now and contribute to KSFR?
Oh, because this is a very important radio station, because you do these amazing interviews with all kinds of people all the time. It's really a fresh radio station with intelligence that is a pleasure to listen to.
Well, I thank you for being on it, and thank you for your wonderful book, What We Eat When We Eat Alone. Deborah Madison and Patrick McFarlane. We'll see you at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 428-1393 is the number for the pledge drive, and people are calling. Keep calling. You can get these. I think we're actually going to have a few more of each book, so you can get a copy of any of the books that you have heard or will hear by calling and making a contribution to KSFR, 505-428-1393. 428-1393. Please support women authors. Please support literature. Please support the KSFR, and please support the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Let's keep going. I'm very happy now to welcome Nancy King. She is a fiction writer. She's the author of the new book, The Stones Speak. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. And before we talk, I know it's the on-air fundraiser, so I'd like to give you my check.
Thank you
for the
so
fundraise.
Much. I'm holding it in my hand. You can hear it flapping. Thank you so much, Nancy.
KSFR really means a whole lot to me. And I remember when Bush was getting selected, and one of the radio announcers said, folks, the news is too grim. Turn off your radio and go take a hike in the mountains. And I felt like it was my neighbor talking to me, giving me something that I needed at the time, and I did exactly that. Turned off the radio and walked into the mountains, and I felt a whole lot better, even though the situation didn't change.
And then you turned the radio back on.
I did, for your shows, of course, and some of the others.
Well, thank you very much. Let that be an example to you, dear listeners. 428-1393 is the number. Please call now, make a contribution to KSFR, and you can get a copy of any of the books that we're talking about today. We've got, I think we have one of each, so I don't know which ones are gone yet, but Nancy's novel is called The Stones Speak, and this is something that is perhaps not your usual fiction in that it's the story of a friendship between women.
Right. And when the man comes in, instead of the man going, oh, I won't say anymore.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'll tell you. I get tired of reading novels where if there is an older woman in the novel, she's a grandmother, she's a wife, she's a mother, and it's all about her role relationships. And I really wanted to read a book about women qua women, successful women who are making their way in the world and who are asking important questions, who are sexual beings, who are fully engaged in life. And so the novel is not about the roles that they may play. It's about the women as human beings.
And their questions, their changes, the issues in life that they're addressing.
That's right. And one of them is invisibility. When you get to be over 40 and you're a woman, it's like you should fade into the woodwork and have no part in the world. You certainly shouldn't think about sex or life or meaning or anything else. And I actually resent that. And I think
it's such a categorizing of women as basically childbearing units and no more.
Right. The roles they play are what's important, not who they are as individuals.
So and what their much larger contribution is.
That's right. And, I mean, I know plenty of women in their 80s who are skiing and active in politics and active, leading active lives, but you don't read about them very often. You don't see their faces. I get a twinge when I see all this anti-aging stuff and the model is an 18-year-old.
Right.
In fact, I wrote to one magazine and I said, well, why don't you show a woman in her 70s? Who's been doing right by herself, eating well, you know, exercising well. Why not that?
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen unless it's a magazine devoted to older women.
And it's particularly an American, you know, United States phenomenon. I was watching some BBC detective show, and the protagonist was a woman in her late 50s, and she was out there solving the murder.
Right.
And I thought, you never have that on a detective show here.
That's right. That's right.
So back to your book.
Yes.
Friendship. There's also, I have to say it, being the dog lover that I am, there's a dog.
Yes, there is. And I should tell you that every writer writes differently. They all have different. And for me, it's like turning on a theater in my head. It's like I turn on this picture in my head and then the characters appear. Now, I am not a dog lover. I do not write about dogs. Frankly, I'm sorry to tell you this, I don't care much about dogs, although dogs tend to like me.
You were in a minority in this town, I'm just saying.
Yes. Anyway, so much to my surprise, the Naomi, a woman in her 60s, is hiking up Atalaya, and she has met a man hiking on the trail, and she's enthusiastic about him. And they take a short little rest, and I'd like to read a short passage. A rough tongue licking her face awakened Naomi, as did a loud voice shouting, Beetle, come here. Either Beetle was deaf or he didn't care. The large black dog didn't move. He kept nuzzling Naomi as if she were a long-lost friend. Caught between annoyance and pleasure, she stroked the dog's face. He took immediate advantage by licking all of her exposed skin. Beetle's owner, a tall, lanky man with a gray ponytail, rushed over to her and tried to pull the dog away. Beetle did his best to ignore him. I'm sorry, I never saw him act like this before, said the man. Maybe we were lovers in past lives, said Naomi, sitting up. Yeah, right, he sneered, struggling to get his dog away from her. I don't mind, a little loving, what could be bad? Naomi didn't much like dogs, especially those that approached and licked without an invitation, but Beetle's attention was making the black hole inside her smaller. She surprised herself again by hugging the dog. Beetle's owner shifted from being concerned about Naomi's welfare to establishing who was boss. At least for the moment, Beetle, with Naomi's support, was winning. And then the man she's been talking to comes up and he says, "You better keep your dog on his leash. He might not always be so friendly. If your girlfriend would mind her own business, Beetle would come when I call her like he always does. She's not my girlfriend. Whoever she is, she needs to butt out where she doesn't belong." The two men glared at each other. More sensibly, Beetle wagged his tail, straining toward Naomi. And the tension builds, and Naomi's trying to diffuse it. And, you know, no trouble, but the two men are just testosteroning. And so finally...
Oh, wow, testosterone made into a verb.
It seemed the most graphic way to describe it. Anyway, she can't get them to stop, so she starts walking down the trail. And she hears this frustrated yell, "Beetle, come back here." And she turns around, and she sees Beetle loping happily toward her. "Go back, Beetle," she called, but he trotted on, leash slithering after him, matching her stride, seemingly delighted. After having to unsnag his leash one too many times, Naomi wrapped it loosely around his neck, freeing him to run and leap. At first she walked slower than usual, hoping Beetle's owner was more concerned about his dog than in confronting the man, but when she saw no sign of him, she resumed her normal pace. It wasn't until they were a third of the way down the mountain that she began to wonder what would happen if Beetle's owner accused her of dog napping. And what about Amos? That's the man she met. Why wasn't he more interested in her than some stupid power struggle more suitable to 8-year-olds and grown men? Beetle tripped Naomi, deliberately. Running in front of her, he stopped short and looked up as she fell. Although she was in no mood to be licked, he gave her no choice. His joy was contagious. She wrapped her arms around him and he snuggled close, seemingly as hug-deprived as she felt. She refused to think how silly they must look, a big black dog and a small white woman blissfully entwined in the middle of a narrow mountain trail. "Beetle!" Naomi jumped up and Beetle ran off before she could grab his leash. "Beetle!" The angry voice grew louder and more insistent. She contemplated hiding, but no tree looked large enough. Frightened, Naomi decided to run.
We're talking to Nancy King. Her book is called The Stones Speak, and we're just about out of time, but I just find it fascinating that for you, the author, being a non-dog lover, that this dog just literally, I mean, the way it jumps into the story, it kind of jumped into your creative process.
That's right, and let me tell you, the dog would not jump out. It kept coming back, and it turns out that the dog is the catalyst in this novel for all the changes that these two women and the man make in their lives.
Now, why should people get on their telephone right now and call 428-1393 besides to get a copy of your book?
Because I think KSFR is an amazing station. It's very responsive to the community. It supports the community and it feeds the community. And people like me would never have a chance to be on the radio and talk about their books, but it's a community-focused station, and I think it's just marvelous.
428-1393 is the number. Nancy King, thanks for being with us. And she will be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival at 3:30 on Saturday. 428-1393 is the number. 428-1393 in the area code 505. If you're calling from out of area, it's 866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. Call now. Please support this station. Please support my show. And as I said before, please support literature and women authors. I've been told that there aren't a whole lot of people, really, even in public radio stations, that have authors on the air that read their books, that talk to them, and that make their work available through the format of radio to the public. If that's something you like, if that's something you care about, please support the station because it's the only way we stay on the air and it's the only way you get to keep hearing it. 505, I'm going to say it slowly, 428-1393. Okay, let's go on. And we're continuing with the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival. I'd like to welcome Victoria Rapinoe. She is the author of a book called I Had the Craziest Dream Last Night, 12 Creative Explorations into the Genius of the Night Mind. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So your book is in the Creative Arts section of the New Mexico Women's Book Festival, and you are going to be speaking on Saturday at...
11:45.
At 11:45.
And it'll be in the Indian Arts and Culture Auditorium.
Oh, okay. So you're going to give a whole presentation
with... I am. It'll be a PowerPoint.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So this is a fascinating exploration. What is the, how are people to use this book?
Well, you're right. They are to use the book. It's a book about accessing dreams in a way to spark your creativity. It's not about analyzing dreams. It's not about scientific, psychological probing. It's about using the material that comes in the night as a means for creative writing, artwork, or even spiritual guidance. And so it's a whole map of different techniques that may appeal to different parts of you at different times, depending on the kind of dream you're having, because dreams come in all different guises.
How did you start doing this work? I mean, I guess you started accessing your own dreams as a vehicle forward in your own creative work.
I did. The 10th International Association for the Study of Dreams showed up in Santa Fe 26 years ago, and just when I happened to have sold my business and was looking for a new life. And so I got a flyer, went down to La Fonda for 5 days in a row with a couple of just ordinary dreams. They weren't very special. But after 5 days of painting the dreams, doing creative writing, doing clay work, doing all kinds of creative expression with the dreams, I was completely and irrevocably altered forever.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Do you still work that way?
I do. I do. And this book comes out of the workshops that I teach. I teach a master workshop every Tuesday in my studio, and people come, primarily women of a certain age come, and we talk about the dreams, and then I put a theme out every week that's different, and then we actually write, illustrate, and bind a book every Tuesday. It's a long class. It's from 1 to 5, 6:30-ish. And it's a very devoted, focused group, and it's an amazing process. And I will also be showing some of those books. My dreamers will be present at the reading.
My dreamers will be present.
My master dreamers. And they'll bring a lot of their books and collages and paintings.
Now, you have published this book in totally black and white.
That's
even
right.
All the illustrations, and sitting here in Santa Fe Baking Company, you are wearing totally
That's
black
right.
and white. What's up with that? Is that related to the dream phenomenon?
No, it's not, because I've never even heard of dreaming in black and white. There are people who say they only dream in black and white, but I'm a color gal. But it started out because that's a more affordable way to print a book. But I've always been a graphic designer in addition to some of the other things that I do. And it just was a natural for me. I love black and white. And the illustrations are very high key contrast. And when I introduced the book last year at the International Dream Conference, I decided to wear black and white, and it was such a hit that when I came home, I've just been doing it ever since. And now the studio's black and white, my bathroom's black and white, my bedroom is black and white, everything I do is black and white.
What does that do for you artistically?
Well, it's thrilling. I never worried about what I wore before, and now it's a whole thing. It's also kind of branding, and people see me in the black and whites, and they say, "Oh, Victoria, dream work, dream book." So it's actually a trademark, and it's been very interesting to see how that develops in terms of this marketing strategy.
You have a companion book, which looks an awful lot like the regular book, but it's actually a coloring book that goes along with it. What's this about? It's literally a coloring book, but full of crazy, wild, almost sort of psychedelic or potentially psychedelic images of your creation.
Yes, well, I got such strong response to the graphics that we decided to go for a coloring book. I think it's been a dream of mine all my life to make a coloring book, and the graphics became so strong in the dream book that we decided to do the companion coloring book, and it's been a hit too. A lot of people have come over and just gone wild, and it becomes psychedelic depending on your vision. So it was kind of interesting to drop out the strong blacks and to just do line designs, but it is kind of a model now for the future. The next series of books will have a coloring book and a workbook and the main book. And so I'll be continuing on with working with dreams, how to work with dreams, but also how to work with the graphics.
These books can be yours. They come as a set. I had the craziest dream last night, 12 creative explorations into the genius of the night mind, and Dreaming in Color. It's the companion coloring book, both by Victoria Rabinow. Why should people call right now to 428-1393, 428-1393, besides to get your book? Why should they support public radio?
Oh, because, well, public radio, for one thing, is what we have is community, a large community, but your show in particular is what brings Santa Fe together. It makes us know one another. It makes us all in together, and it's always so much fun to listen in and hear the people that you've met casually or the friends that you know really well. A chance for everyone to have a voice in Santa Fe.
Victoria Rabinow, thanks for being with us. 428-1393 is the number, and this is actually a wonderful book that you can get, especially if you're interested in your own dreams, interested in using dreams as a vehicle for creative process. 505-428-1393. We only have, I think, one or two copies of each book, so get them now, get them while they're hot. Okay. I am delighted now to welcome Barbara Mayfield. She has written and illustrated a book called The Magical Mrs. Iptweet and Me, A Story of Life, Quirkiness, and a Parade. And she will be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival and doing a presentation on Saturday at 11:45 in the morning in the Children's Pavilion.
In the Children's Pavilion. Yes. Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Hi. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
Now, Mrs. Iptweet is a character that you've been developing for some time.
Yes, a very long time. This book has been in process for a long time because, you know, I did not start out as a writer or an author. I had no intention. The only evidence looking backwards that may have indicated I could write something was that I have read since the moment the sisters and Mrs. Pinto, my second grade teacher, taught me how to read. It's just been a continuing line, and I'm a good speller. And I won spelling bees in grade school.
At this point in history, Ms. Mayfield, good spelling is no longer a prerequisite for being a good author. I just want to say that.
I don't agree. Spell check is not the answer to everything.
Spell check plus copy editors? Well, in any case, who is the magical Mrs. Iptweet, and how did she bubble up in your life?
That is exactly the phrase, the bubble up thing. Long story short, and this is what I'm going to talk about during my presentation, is the roundabout route that brought this book into the world. But Mrs. Iptweet was from several different things. Let's see. She came in a dream and spelled her name. And at that time, in the late 90s, I was blessed and part of an improvisational storytelling group that twice a month would get together and we'd bring prompts and simply take 2 minutes to make a story about the prompt and then get back together and tell the story again. And it's a magical process and amazing things would happen. And after the name came spelled, this little story started bubbling through in the voice of this child, the girl. And some of them were so lovely that I did the unthinkable. In the storytelling group, I would go out to my car after the meeting and write them down. Mm-hmm. And I didn't tell anybody. And later, I showed them to a writer friend, and she said, "Barbara, this is a book." And then I took classes, because at the time, I was only writing things for the stage.
So you are, what would you call it, performance artist or stand-up comedian? Or
I like to think of me as a comedy theater one-woman comedic performance troupe.
I am a troupe.
Yeah. And now this author thing. The other thing is that Mrs. Iptweet is a combination. I think of her as Iptweetness. It's really more of a concept and a way of living. And once a young man in a school asked me if I was Mrs. Iptweet, and although I do have a few of her outfits, and some of her qualities, I really learned about Iptweetness from some of the elderly ladies who lived on my street back east when I was raising my boys. Mrs. Van Roken and Mrs. Monroe and Mrs. Messick, who were lively elderly ladies who knew what life is about, man oh man, and I am so grateful to know them.
Would you like to read a little passage from The Magical Mrs. Iptweet and Me?
I will do that, and we're going to do something radical and just read three paragraphs from the beginning of chapter 11, which I've never read before out loud, and here it's called The Magic and Power of Names. Inside the studio was cool and dark. I smelled the smell of paint and turpentine. Mrs. Iptweet's newest painting sat on a bench leaning against the wall. Her rocking chair with the swirls, hearts, and dots painted on it was sitting in front of the painting. Mrs. Iptweet likes to rock and paint at the same time. Mrs. Iptweet motioned to me to sit on the blue and white stripy, cushiony chair. "Be careful, Sherry. There are some paint drips on that chair," said Mrs. Iptweet. "I don't know how those paint drips landed there. It seems paint has a mind of its own." I climbed into the comfy chair and sat in between the paint blobs. Mrs. Iptweet pulled a big fat book down from her bookcase. She turned her rocking chair to face me and sat down. "So, the magic and power of names. Ready?" asked Mrs. Iptweet. Yeah, there you go.
That's short.
But that is very short.
I can keep going.
I think that's what we call a teaser. If people want to get a copy of this book, of course, ladies and gentlemen, they can call 428-1393 now and get a copy of the book and make a contribution to KSFR. Barbara, you're a longtime, not only fan, but participant in KSFR. Why should people, besides to get your wonderful book, why should they call right now and make a contribution to the station?
Because KSFR is a treasure, and there are not a lot of stations that have local programming where people in the community can go in and do their thing. And it's quite a diverse set of shows and opinions. It is not a one-sided view at all. And this does not exist in other cities of the country. And I know this from doing PR and publicity and media relations. It's very hard in some cities even to find a show that will have authors on. This is not the usual thing, Mary Charlotte.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So call right now, 428-1393. Score a copy of The Magical Mrs. Iptweet and Me. You are drawn to writing for children. Is it really for children, or is it for children of all ages?
Well, you know, grown-ups really are liking this book, and I'm finding that men love the dad character. They love him. And he is a terrific guy, I must say. And that was a surprise. He was the hardest character I had to come up with and was the most surprising how he turned out. And I find that many women are finding that they identify very strongly with Mrs. Iptweet or Aunt Belle and are doing these things with the kids in their lives, both parents and, like, children and grandchildren. I'm happy to say that grown-ups like this book, too.
So you will be at the Children's Book Pavilion once again at 11:45 on Saturday at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival.
That is right, and I hope to see you all there. And bring the book that you get from KSFR, and I'll sign it.
If they're out there for we'll have to. The logistics of that may be tricky.
Well, okay, they'll work it out. We'll work it out.
We will work it out. But in any case, call right now 428-1393. Barbara, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Mary Charlotte.
And thank you to Jennifer and Matt Lessig.
Thank
Matt's
you.
Surprise. Is it a surprise, Matt? Randy and now, Don Bagley wants to thank you,
Yay.
Mary Charlotte, and all producers here on KSFR.
Thank you so much to all of you, and keep calling. We want to sell every book out that has been that we've talked to an author of here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And I want to thank all the listeners who have participated so far during the KSFR Fun Drive. We need all the help we can get. We need your help to stay on the air. 505-428-1393. It's really a very simple matter of picking up your phone and calling. Now, as I was saying before, if you can afford $1 or $2 a week to pay for the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, then maybe you could make a contribution of $25 to $50. It's not that much. When you think about all the things that even those of us who are struggling, you know, go out and buy a coffee or buy a meal, just maybe if money is tight, sacrifice one little meal out and make a sandwich at home, contribute to KSFR so that you have high-quality radio, so that this show can stay on the air and this station can stay on the air. 505-428-1393. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. As you probably know by now, we are streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. That means you can hear the radio station wherever you go, as long as there's a computer handy. You can find me, you can find my website at santafe.radiocafe.org. You can listen to the show there even after it's over, pretty much any time of day or night, thanks to Santa Fe's amazing .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, where if you are onto it, you will see that I am going to make chocolate chip cookies for people who donate, but you have to come to the cafe. Anyway, thanks so much to Mary Lynn LeBlanc, to Ron Bloomberg, for everybody at KSFR. And stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. Now, 428-1393 is the number from out of area, 866-907-KSFR. Please keep the phones ringing off the hook, and let us know that you care about public radio. I'm serious. I mean, we really can't do it without you. It's not like we're just talking because we have mouths. We're doing it because we really, really need listener support. So we will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day, and call now, 428-1393. Hasta la vista. Ciao.